Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Jim Fetzer, David Ray Griffin, our guests this hour. David, let's go back to you, talk about the structure, if we can. If we can assume that the history of engineering, a steel frame high-rise never collapsed because of a fire, how could we have three happen in one day?
Well, that's right. The odds against that happening would probably be about one in a trillion. So that's one big problem. The other big problem with the official story is that even if you say that it didn't, you know, the steel didn't melt, but it just weakened, the collapses would not have occurred, even if they had been possible, in the way they occurred. For example, if steel softened, it would start to bend and sag. And yet, as you see from the video clips, all three buildings have a sudden beginning. There's a very sudden onset to the collapse. Then the collapse is straight down rather than the buildings falling over. They fall at virtually free fall speed.
Well, could that have been because of the weight from each layer of the building?
Well, that's the official theory. But one problem with that is the next characteristic is that these were total collapses. So the 110-story Twin Towers collapsed into a pile of rubble only a few stories high. Building 7, which of course was not hit by a plane and did not have significant fires in it, collapsed in the way of a classic implosion into a very tiny pile of rubble.
And that's the one where the owner was overheard of saying, you know, we brought it down or something like that?
Well, Silverstein, the owner and the one who had taken out a lease on the whole World Trade Center just a few weeks before it had been finalized.
And he had a $3-something billion insurance policy on the lease. Is that true, Jim Fetzer?
3.5. Absolutely right, George. And Underwriters Laboratory, by the way, just to complement what David has been saying, had certified the steel used in these buildings for 2,000 degrees up to 6 hours before it would show any significant weakening. Well, most of that fuel burned off in those gigantic fireballs we all saw when the buildings were first impacted by the aircraft.
Somebody had told me, Jim and David, that they cut corners in the World Trade Center and provided inferior steel. Can you buy that argument?
No, I think that's nonsense. These were admirably constructed buildings. In fact, they had marvelous load redistribution properties. Frank DeMartini, for example, who was the project manager, explained how they could withstand multiple impacts from the largest commercial airliners then available, which were Boeing 707s. The 767s are very similar in their size, mass, and other dimensions. He said that the effect of one of these aircraft hitting one of these buildings would be like sticking a pencil through mosquito netting. So neither the impact of the planes nor the fires, which, by the way, burned only very briefly. Remember, if they're certified for 6 hours up to 2,000 degrees before they even show significant weakening, the South Tower fell in less than an hour.
True.
And the North Tower in only about an hour and a half. So there simply wasn't enough time for that steel to be heated and to melt. In fact, steel is an excellent conductor, George, which means that if you heat one part of it, it rapidly dissipates to other parts, so that in order for the government's theory to be remotely plausible, you'd have to be simultaneously weakening or melting the whole floor. And remember, those buildings were designed to withhold those structures. They were very solid. There were 47 massive columns that went up the center of those buildings and another 240 around their perimeters. They were some of the best built structures in engineering history.
Well, I've got to tell you, in St. Louis, where I hail from, there's a company there called Spiritus Wrecking, and one of their major functions in life is to bring down buildings, and so I've seen a lot of video of their work, and I do have to tell you, on that morning of 9/11, when I saw those buildings go down, it looked exactly like a demolition.
Well, that's very good, George. In fact, you know, David mentioned how Larry Silverstein told this fire chief or whoever that he thought there'd been so much death and destruction, maybe the best thing to do was to pull it, and that then they watched, the firemen made the decision, then they watched it come down.
Right. If they did pull Building 7, maybe that was the right thing to do. So why is that a big issue?
Well, because we're talking about 5:20 in the afternoon, about 7 hours after the other events. It wasn't hit by any aircraft. It only had a couple of very modest fires. It was one of the most massively designed buildings in engineering history, from all I can tell. The support beams there were absolutely solid steel, which is highly unusual. It was constructed over a huge electrical generator providing electricity for lower Manhattan. It had a command bunker in there that had its own air and water supply, George. This was a building that just was not going to come down.
So
if you stop and think about it, in order to pull it, there had to be pre-positioned.
Okay, well, that's something you just couldn't do in 7 hours.
Absolutely not.
Like, all right, now, what about the argument that because there were so many, confidential things in that building, it was pre-wired to go down? Of course, I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to work in a building if I knew it was loaded with explosives.
Well, it's very, very strange, you know, what's going on here. There were all kinds of, CIA, Secret Service, emergency management office there. Giuliani was in there, apparently, observing all this going down. He said they were warned that the towers were going to collapse, which is quite bizarre by itself, since this had never happened before in the history of structural engineering. So who's giving him this warning for this completely unexpected event? The fire teams are in the buildings. They don't have any reason to believe they're going to collapse. They're saying they can easily control these fires with a couple of lines.
Okay, if the buildings were taken down, how did they get the explosives in these buildings? I mean, first of all, the amount of explosives would have had to have been huge.
Well, actually, that's a very interesting question. There were all these security anomalies in the 2 weeks leading up to 9/11, where various parts of these buildings were shut down. The employees were told to go home.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they shut off the normal security controls, including the cameras. Stephen Jones has calculated that it would have taken 40 men 10 trips to plant enough explosive to take these buildings down per building. So it's not really that massive project. Plus, there were many reports about these teams of so-called engineers going in and out of the buildings, and they claimed that they were replacing cables in the building, but it had never happened before.
Okay, what about the two planes that hit the two towers then, in the poor souls that were on those planes?
Well, David, what would you like to know about them, George? I mean, one hit at the 80th floor, right?
I mean,
South Tower.
You're not denying that the planes were hijacked, right?
I'm not denying, no. We're not denying that the four planes were hijacked by 19 alleged Arab hijackers. At least that's the official story,
sure.
George. And let me make it very clear. The official story is extremely interesting for the following obvious reason upon reflection. When you have two or more individuals coordinating their efforts to bring about an illegal end, they are engaged in a conspiracy.
Sure.
So the government's own theory here that these 19 guys under control of a fellow off in a cave in Afghanistan pulled this off is obviously a conspiracy theory. Now, from our analysis of the evidence and so forth, it's a hopelessly untenable one because it's not defensible. But notice how the government tried to resist even having any investigation whatsoever. It's like what Bush is saying now. He wants to look forward regarding Katrina, for example, not analyze what actually happened. I don't see how you can be the security president without analyzing what happened so you know what went wrong so you can make sure it won't happen again.
Okay, I just played a tape of Flight 93, the one that crashed over Pennsylvania. And, of course, as you know, there's a controversy over that plane. But, I could distinctively hear someone with a foreign accent saying bomb, bomb. Now, I mean, are you saying that didn't happen?
Flight 93?
93, yeah.
Well, 93 actually appears to have been shot down. I mean, remember I was explaining how I was called by residents of the area who told me they heard the explosions in the air. There's not, the debris is scattered over 8 square miles, George. That's inconsistent with the idea that it crashed. As an inspector general for the Air Force confirmed to me, there's even a report of a Major Rick Gibney, who was with the Happy Hooligans, and a famous Air National Guard unit out of Fargo, North Dakota, was transferred over to Langley temporarily, may have shot it down. Now, interestingly, I was on a program the other day with a fellow who actually had made that report, who said now it had turned out to be false, but I didn't get to pursue it. All he means is Gibney today is denying it, but that's very typical.
All right, but if it was shot down because it was hijacked, I sadly enough, don't have a problem with it. I mean, I might have even, if I were running whatever part of government needed to make that call, I don't think we would have had much of a choice, do you?
fair enough, George, about 93, but then why does the government lie to us? What, we're not entitled to know what actually happened?
Well, I guess like TWA Flight 800, which I think also went down under very suspicious circumstances, I don't think they want us to know that they had to shoot down a commercial plane. I don't think they want us to know that maybe Ramzi Youssef and his group took down TWA Flight 800 for fear and panic. I don't agree with that. I think we should be disclosed.
Well, I think there's a different reason they don't want us to know about TWA 800. All the evidence I have suggests that it was brought down by a missile fired from a submarine during a training exercise, and they sure as hell don't want us to know that, George.
Well, that's possible. I'm going to go on that case with the Peter Lance theory that Ramzi Youssef and his project Bojinko, that he wanted to do that. He was on trial at the same time. That's another issue. Let's not take away time from this. Okay, so let's go back just a little bit. Planes have been hijacked. They're heading for the two towers, all right? Do you believe that there are people in those planes? Some people think they were drones. Nobody was in there.
Do I or does David? I would say David and I think, both believe that there were passengers in those planes.
Okay, all right.
But George, I mean, the whole account the government has given us violates laws of nature. It's an impossible account. The melting point of steel could not have been reached. The fires weren't hot enough. They didn't burn long enough. They couldn't have even weakened, as David was pointing out. It would have caused an asymmetrical sag. It wouldn't have caused a complete collapse. Look, if I went to the top of the building, say a 110-story building, and released a grand piano, it would reach the ground about the same time those buildings came down. But the grand piano is falling through free space, no resistance whatsoever. It's not physically possible that the building could have fallen at the same rate as that grand piano unless all the resistance had been blown out by the floors beneath it. It's not physically possible.
What about the concrete of the building? Some say that it was all pulverized. That's not supposed to happen in a mere collapse.
David can elaborate at length on this, but let me make the point that, in my judgment, this is the smoking gun. You have this huge cloud of debris at the top. Remember, you release that grand piano, you expect it's going to fragment and shatter when it hits the ground.
Sure.
Similarly, for Building 7, okay, it didn't make this huge cloud of dust basically until it hit the ground, but Twin Tower 1 and 2 are the opposite. They're like exploding from the top. You are seeing massive debris being blown out horizontally and even upward, George.
True.
That's completely
true.
Physically inconsistent with one floor falling on another.
All right, David, react to that.
Well, I mean, that's right, and it's exactly what you would expect if very powerful explosives were used to slice the steel. And that's the only way you can explain how you had this total collapse when these buildings had these massive steel columns, particularly the core columns, the 47. You would require quite a few slices in the steel. Well, such powerful explosions are going to pulverize the concrete and virtually everything else in the building. People have reported that at Ground Zero, all they saw, for the most part, was steel and dust. They didn't see tables, they didn't see computers, they didn't see much of anything. Everything virtually was pulverized.
George, I'd just like to point out that David earlier, when he offered that estimate of one in a trillion, was being very kind to the government, because the fact is that the effects that were being displayed here cannot have been brought about by the causes the government alleges, so that those effects on the government's official account, that is a combination of the impact of the planes and the fires and the one floor pancaking on another, has actually a probability value less than zero. It can't happen. It's physically impossible. So I introduced the term null, a zero with a bar from it. It's impossible. Can't happen at all.
React, if you can, to what they were saying about the plane that hit the Pentagon. Some people say it wasn't a plane. And I can swear, Jim, I've seen a picture of some plane parts out there in front of the Pentagon.
You've seen a picture that appears to have been planted. There is one piece of a plane that was actually photographed in different locations, George, that appears to have been planted. It doesn't actually fit on any part of a Boeing 757. In other words, you take that and move it around the fuselage, you won't find the place where it fits. What's missing, see, that entry hole is actually very small. Most people see these photographs after the upper floors collapse, but that was about a half an hour after the initial impact. The initial impact hole is only about 10 feet high and maybe 16 feet wide, about the size of the double doors of a mansion. There are unbroken windows in the immediate vicinity. There's fence there that's unbroken. There's all these cable rolls. If a 100-ton Boeing 757 with a wingspan of 125 feet and a tail that stands 44 feet above the ground had impacted there, there would have been massive debris, a huge crater. There would have been remnants of the wings, the seats, the luggage, the fuselage. I mean, you know, the bodies would have been all over the place. The tail, not even the engines were recovered. The only engine part was actually compatible with a much smaller jet. It was too big from a cruise missile and too small for a Boeing 757.
What do you think hit the Pentagon?
Well, it actually happens to fit an A-3 Sky Warrior. It's a JT-8D engine. And there was an independent report that some A-3 Sky Warriors out in near Fort Collins, Colorado, at a small airport, were being retrofitted by teams of engineers, and they were designing them with Global Hawk technology,
really?
Missile technology, all kinds of stuff.
Those are drones, aren't they?
Pardon me?
Those are drones, aren't they?
Well, they can be remotely controlled, absolutely right. I mean, it's pretty tough for a pilot, no matter how conscientious, to deliberately fly himself into a building. The only few frames, you know, that the Pentagon has ever released, and it's stunning because if they wanted to, if you look at that building, there are cameras on that building, you know, every 100 feet or so around the entire perimeter. It's got to be the most heavily defended building in the entire world. These guys get $400 billion a year, you know. They're going to make sure they're secure.
Where's the video?
Cameras, right. Cameras across the street. There's one frame where you can actually see what looks like it might be the silhouette of a small plane, and there's a plume that may be a missile fired from it just as it came to impact with the building that would be consistent with the sort of damage incurred. I mean, even the entire, the inner structure, George, of the damage to the support pillars is inconsistent with a Boeing 757. Plus, see, either the Boeing came down at an angle, in which case there would have been a huge crater, analogous to what you would see from other plane crashes around the world, or it came almost horizontal. But to hit on the ground floor, those engines would have been plowing up the ground or even the fuselage, George. That's why the fact that the lawn is perfectly smooth and green as a putting surface is extremely significant.
I agree with that, Jim. You're absolutely right there. There should have been marks from this plane skidding in. It could not. Nobody could have hit that with a direct hit that way.
You got it.
Well, David, we're wrapping up this hour. How quickly it goes. What would you like to say before you say sayonara for the night?
I don't know. There's nothing just off the top of my head I want to add.
Other than you're convinced something was seriously wrong and it's not the official version.
Well, yes, and the my second book on 9/11 is called 9/11 Commission Report: Omissions and Distortions, and it's simply full of stunning omissions, such as the fact that Cheney was already down in the underground shelter by 9:15, certainly by 9:20. Norman Mineta says it, but. The 9/11 Commission says, no, he didn't get down there till almost 10 o'clock, and that's very convenient because then he wasn't there when whatever was hitting the Pentagon was doing that, and he didn't have time to give a shoot-down order for Flight 93. One would think the news media, the mainstream media, would at least point out this rather obvious lie, but of course they don't.
All right, David, we're going to have you back again on another day. When we come back, Jim Fetzer will stick with us along with Morgan Reynolds, Dr. Morgan Reynolds. He used to be the chief economist for the U.S. Department of Labor during George W. Bush's first term. We're going to talk with him.